Hello! Welcome back to the Long Distance Love Bombs podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Jeremy Goldberg, and today's guest is Alyssa Olenek. She is an exercise physiology PhD student. She is a fitness dork. She's a nutrition, weightlifting, wellness, ultra marathon nutrition expert. And in this episode, she goes all in, full speed, about health, science, nutrition, fitness, how to deal with all of the misinformation that's out in the world. We unpack diet, what to eat. We talk about weightlifting, exercise, how to do it and when, why it's so important. If you were into health and wellness, you are going to devour this episode, this conversation. She is real smart, real sharp, full of information. I think you're going to dig it. So without further ado, Alyssa Olenek. Alyssa Olenek, welcome to the podcast.
Hello, hello.
You're here. You made it.
I did make it. It's been a little bit hectic of a day, but I'm glad to sit down and chat. I think I need to just talk for a little bit. So I'm happy to be here.
You're in the perfect space to do that. And so we were just jamming a few minutes ago, and I said to you, can we just start recording? Because I have 100 questions about that thing that you just off the cuffs shared.
So yes.
you said that in a week or so you're going to go to the Grand Canyon, mm-hmm. and you're going to do a run called the Rim to Rim Run, in which you go down one side of the canyon, up the other side, and then back.
Yes.
In a single day.
Yes.
Why are you doing that?
So for the context here, for people who don't know me, and I think your circle is a little bit outside of mine, where your listeners probably actually don't know who I am. Yeah. So I'm Alyssa Olenek. I'm known on the internet for being Little List Fitness. And like by trade, I'm more of like a weightlifter, beefcake, super strong, crazy like weightlifting person. But I've picked up this irrational hobby the last handful of years. About 5 years ago, I started getting into the outdoors and I started doing trail running that turned into trail races and that turned into ultra running. So now I do ultra marathons. I just finished my 7th and my first 100K about a month ago. And so my boyfriend and I both do these. We're both crazy. We do them together. And we booked these tickets months before we thought things would calm down by now, like, but they have clearly not. And so one of our bucket list run things that we've always wanted to do is something called the Rim to Rim to Rim in the Grand Canyon. So there's Rim to Rim where you can go south to north or north to south. And in the summer month, there's a shuttle that will pick you up. But in the winter months where we're going, there's no shuttle. So if you get to the one side, you have to get yourself back to the other side. There's no bailing on the other side. So since we're going in November, shuttles are closed. So as long as weather is okay and like nothing crazy moves in, because it's the desert and the canyon and out west, things can happen. As long as no crazy like snowstorms occur, we are going to try to cover the distance of the canyon from south to north and south and back in a day. And I think I don't know off the top of my head, it's somewhere between 43 to 50 miles. And it probably will take about, I want to say 15 hours. So a little over half a day. And so we're going to hopefully attempt that. And so I haven't ran since my race last month, but whatever. I can hike and go. I was in the Grand Canyon actually in March and I did a cowboy loop out there. That's like a 21 mile thing. So I know I'm familiar with the canyon. I know what the trails are like. It's just a lot of downhill and then it's a lot of power hiking. So it's not as much running. It's just like falling down for a little bit and then really climbing slow on your way back out.
Yeah. It's still a thing though. I mean, you make it sound like it's no big. I did a retreat last year in Flagstaff.
Yeah.
And we went to the Grand Canyon. Mm-hmm. And I've seen it. It's fucking big.
It's crazy.
And a couple years before that, I did a hike maybe a third of the way down and back up to the top. And that mm-hmm. was also like a thing.
Yeah, no, the canyon is like hard. And it's one of those things that it's hard no matter how fit or unfit you are, because it's just,
it's brutal.
You're going down, which down is a lot harder than people think, like going downhill, mm-hmm. even though gravity is working with you. Mm-hmm. But then you're coming up and you're climbing a lot. And the climbing doesn't stop because you're coming out of the world's most beautiful hole, right? So like you're just climbing and climbing and climbing and climbing. And so-
yeah.
I mean, I know I've downplayed, I think, because I've just been saturated in ultra culture for so long. You're like, oh, I'm going to go over and do a rim to rim to rim. And people are like, oh, cool. I did that last March. And you're like, sweet. Like, these are just the people that I associate with myself with, but I forget that this is like a doing anything more than like a, maybe a 5 mile hike is just like completely obscene to like just a normal human being. Like this is like your average everyday outdoors enthusiast.
Yeah. So maybe for someone that's listening that doesn't know what an ultra marathon is, do you mind describing that scene a little bit?
Yeah, not at all. So there's this world where people do trail runs instead of road runs and marathons. So I think people can more familiarize themselves. They've seen like the road races, like the 5Ks and the half marathons, maybe marathons, and they know what that scene's like, or they see the running clubs and running groups on the weekends in their city, and they're familiar with your road runners and all that stuff. So there's this subset of running where there's people who run on trail, and there's definitely trail runs that are shorter than the marathon distance, but there's these races called ultramarathons. And they're anything that is over the marathon distance. So it's technically like 26.3 miles is an ultramarathon, quote unquote. But it's they generally start at the 50K distance. I've done a 27 mile race before, which technically was an ultra. But generally, they're going to be like the 50K, which is about 30 to 35 miles, around 32 on average. But every race varies. So 50K is probably like what people would consider a trail marathon, more or less. Like that's kind of like the equivalent of that, and depending on the terrain, depends on how long it takes. They generally take longer though, so technically ultra endurance is considered to be anything over 4 hours, so like Ironmans fall into the ultra endurance type niche. But in ultra marathons, it's they 50k, which is like 32 ish miles, and then they go to 50 miles distance. They switch between units, and then they go to 100k, which is about 62 or so miles, and then they go to 100 milers, and then they have things, they have 200 milers, and then there's distances in between. Like there's races that fall almost anywhere in that spectrum. There'll be like 43 mile races or 74 mile races or 135. So it really is just anything over that marathon distance, and they're either you're doing them just to hit the distance, or there's like fun challenging races that you do just because of their reputation or the terrain or the location, or just like the challenge of what they are. And so it's just this crazy community of people, but it's really, really cool because you think like these really, really insanely fit people do this, but it's such a beautiful spectrum of fitness levels and like body shapes and people types and like ages and genders. It's just, it's actually really, really cool when you're out there, because it's like very encouraging, because no one really cares if you're the front of the pack or the back of the pack. We're all just out there doing something that like so few people are willing to even conceptualize, let alone like be willing to do. So it doesn't really matter if you're in the middle of the pack, but you're already doing something that's so hard and so just stupid. Like, you know what I mean? Like your hobby and interest is so stupid. But they're really cool, and they're usually done on trail or mountain terrain. And so that trail terrain can vary. And I've done races that are more flat and runnable to races that are like, you're basically power hiking, hanging on for your life the entire time. You can't even run because the terrain's so rough. Like, so it really varies on where it's at and what like the goal of the race is. And that changes like how long these things take you. So they can take you anywhere from like 4 hours to like 40 hours, depending on like the race or the distance and the terrain or whatever you're doing.
Yeah. And so I'm somebody that promotes doing hard shit. And I started a program called Do More Hard Shit with my buddy. I think that it creates strength and inner fortitude and confidence and all of that stuff. Is there a, in your perspective, is there a huge difference between doing a marathon and an ultra marathon in terms of the internal, like what it gives you?
So I've never done a road marathon. I never did a road race. I just jumped to ultra. But I do tell people, so I'm really big about doing hard stuff too. And that's why I kind of reshare your work a lot with my audience, because I'm always encouraging people to do like do hard things or like do hard shit. Like I'm all about that. Mm-hmm. And like I kind of alluded to earlier, I'm a little bit more like I'm more genetically inclined to be more of a weightlifter, CrossFit, like that kind of style of fitness. Like I've just, I'm more inclined to it, but I've been doing it for years. I'm pretty strong. I'm like a little muscle hamster is how I would describe myself for those of you who can't see me. I don't look like a runner, right? Like I'm not saying I look unfit, but I don't look like your stereotypical road runner. And so I
you said muscle hamster.
I'm like a little ball of muscle. Yeah. Like I'm a little muscle hamster. Like if you gave a little hamster steroids, like that's my body type. Like that's exactly how I would describe it. It is what it is. But I know that those things come more, I mean, I've worked towards those and worked hard at those are hard in their own regards. But when I started my PhD, I recognized there was just areas of mental weakness that I wanted to work on, because getting a PhD is really hard. And I've always been about doing hard things and living outside of my comfort zone. And I started getting into trail running and ultra running and the outdoors. And that I noticed right away was something that like was harder for me. I wasn't as naturally inclined to it, but I love that stuff. I have the strength for it, but I just like, it was harder for me to hack and I couldn't do it. And so I like almost inadvertently started doing ultras and trail running because I wanted to do something that I sucked at, because I wanted to force myself to lean into the suck and the hard and like mentally challenging myself. And like, there's nothing harder than it's not even the races are hard, but the training for them is the hardest part, because it's every weekend you're giving your whole day up and you're spending hours of the in the woods just alone with your own thoughts and moving forward for no reason other than this insane goal that you have that like no one's making you do. And it's just like exposing yourself to that hard stuff over and over. And the thing about fitness that I love is no matter how fit you get, if you're always pushing at the level of which is your best, it's always going to be uncomfortable. Like you're only raising your ceiling. You're never actually going to master. Like it's never going to not be uncomfortable. You're just going to have a better work capacity or work output. And so I like thinking of like life, like fitness and things like that. And so I felt myself though, which is crazy, because I got into my ultra marathons while getting my PhD, how much more mentally strong and grittier I am by leaning into something that like I wasn't good at and pursuing something that I sucked at and doing something just for the sake of the fact that it was hard and no other reason than that. And it's been really, really cool. So I love encouraging people to do that too, because I've watched how much it has transformed me and like the confidence, but like how much more I trust myself and trust my decisions and trust like my ability to like know who I am and what I want and like how to do things, because I've just sat in discomfort and with my own thoughts for so long that you can't have it not change you. When you constantly do hard things and live outside that comfort zone, you can't help but grow, because you either grow or you quit. And it's really the only options that you kind of have in those moments.
You strike me as a person that has a lot of natural energy.
Yes. Yes. I'm so sorry.
Apologize.
I really do. I'm just like, my boyfriend around like 6 p.m. every night tells me I have to wind down, because I get like the zoomies, like a dog. You know what I mean? He's like, okay, Alyssa, like he's like, it's time to wind down or you're not going to fall asleep. I've always been that way though, I guess. Yeah. I think I was just born with an extra battery pack. I'm not really sure.
Yeah, to continue that muscle hamster analogy, it's like the wheel, you know, they have that device where they just run and run and run and run and run. Mm-hmm. I feel like you're kind of like that personality type. And so it makes sense that ultra marathons is a good match for that output.
Yeah, I go. I don't really like sitting still. I'm not saying I don't relax, but like I just generally like I don't enjoy napping. Like I don't enjoy watching TV for more than an hour. I just like to do things, and I'm always on the move. I don't know. Maybe it's a downfall sometimes, but I've just always been that way, I guess, since I was little.
You're right where you need to be. So I would like to hear more about your background because you have an interesting mix in that you're big into fitness, you do the ultra marathon stuff, but you're also a graduate student who is pursuing higher education in what exactly do you study? And
so I'm getting my PhD in exercise physiology, and I basically like love exercise and fitness and movements, but science and the science of it. So I really am, I'm like very gung-ho about my hobbies and interests. So like my business is fitness and science communication based, and I study and research science and exercise and metabolism. And then like my hobbies are all exercise and fitness and moving. So it's very much so something that's kind of inundated my entire life. But yeah, I'm in the third year. I'm at the end of the third year. The pandemic has really affected my PhD timeline. So I'm going to be going into the fourth year of my PhD at the end of this semester. And I just passed my qualifying exams this summer. So I'm officially a candidate. So like I'm a PhDC. So I'm like qualified to get my PhD. I basically just need the pandemic to like get out of the way so I can do my dissertation. But I am getting my doctoral degree in exercise physiology. That's the same as my master's degree. And my research interest is like exercise, like high intensity interval training, the effects of like menstrual cycle or sex differences in exercise and metabolism, and then like postprandial metabolism and health. So like basically like how what we eat affects our bodies and our metabolic health and nutrition, sports nutrition. And then like my interest and hobbies kind of surround that, where it's like resistance training and running and sports nutrition. And like, I like to use the science that I learn in my courses and my research and all that I do, and apply that not only to myself as like a giant self-science experiment and everything that I do, but then like the clients and the people that I work with, and then the work that I do within social media and how I run my business.
Mm. And I've seen your content, and you're a little bit sassy at times in terms of, because my impression of the fitness, health, and wellness industry as a whole is that there's a lot of information out there. There's a lot of fitness models, fitspiration, yeah, tummy tea kind of vibe. And then I've seen you come in with some hard science and refute some of those widespread ideas, let's call them.
Yeah. Debunking is my favorite pastime. Sassily debunking. I like to say I bring sass and science to the industry. I try to play it safe, I guess, the first few years I was on Instagram. And I think we all know that your page and your social media and your business, just, you have, we talked about this right before we started the podcast, but you have to find your voice in order, like, people, they want to connect to you as a person. So as much as I know people value my science, I know they value my science because there's more to my science than just like boring statements and numbers and data and stuff like that. But I played it safe for a long time. And then I just kind of got to a point about the beginning of 2019. And this is when things took off for me. And I was like, I just got so frustrated with the status of the fitness industry. And I was starting to finally feel more confident in my knowledge base. I think I was in the second year of my PhD at this time. So finally, like, I had 4 years of grad school under my belt. I started to feel not maybe like an expert, but like I had some ground to stand on in my knowledge base. That imposter syndrome kind of started to like not be as much of like a overshadow on your entire life, which Ultra Runner kind of helped with all that as well. But I just got really sick of it. And I was like, you know what? This is crap. Like, I'm done. And I'm in real life, like, I'm high energy, but I'm also really sassy and like blunt and honest. Like, I value honesty and efficiency and like say it like it is, like, kind of person. And so my brother, it was like Christmas of 2018, right before this started. He's like, Alyssa, you've always just been so sassy for no reason. He goes, I don't know why you're not using this. He goes, you're smart enough to like call this stuff out and debunk it, but also like educate people why. He's like, and he went to school for business. And so he's giving me a lot of advice. He's like, I don't understand why you're not capitalizing on this thing that you have that other people don't have. And I was like, you know what? You're right. And I just got frustrated. And so I just kind of went out swinging for like a whole year. Maybe I've toned down a little bit now. As I've, you know, solidified my voice in my niche, but I still call out stuff, but I love to take the stuff that people are confused by or they believe in, and then like use science and actual like research or data or like explaining some sort of like physiological pathway or phenomenon to help people not only like say, okay, this is wrong, but this is why it's wrong. So I don't like to just like call things out, but I like to bring people in because that stuff's entertaining and it's flashy and it's fun and people are going to notice it because they know those things. They're inundated with those messages all the time. But I'm like, I pull them in with that, but I'm like, but hey, I'm going to teach you something while you're here because I want you to never, ever, ever be confused by this message ever again. So my phrase is that I use for my branding and my business is demand better. So like I tell people, I'm like, demand better from yourselves, from other people, but the industry. So like I want to, and I mostly work with female clientele. I'm like, I literally want women to reject like the really crappy fitness and diet industry norms that only value them for like changing their body and tummy teas and detoxes and like almost stuff that's almost harmful or just completely wrong. Like they're just crap people makes up, or it's just very attractive women touting something that has no validity or is not going to help people. And so I just kind of got so sick of it. And I care about other people a lot. So I was like, no, I'm done. I was like, I'm done. I'm going to go out. I'm going to like, it's like, I don't really know how I'm going to fix this, but I was like, I'm going to make this industry better. And so I just like slowly started calling things out and getting sassy. But through doing that, I started to make the connections with a ton of other educated professionals in our field. And we've kind of formed this thing called the science crew because I'm not an expert at everything. And so like, I just like started making this army of like these other educated women who are doing the right thing in the industry and like kind of creating this like together, this wave to make a change in the standard. And I never thought that like being sassy on the internet would make that big of a difference, but you would not believe how many amazing messages from women I get who are like, you've changed the way I've thought about things. But it's kind of that sassiness that adds that personality to my profile, but it's also entertaining and fun and like a way to get people to like listen to you for a second, just enough that then they'll be like, okay, well, I'll listen to what she has to say afterwards. So I kind of like will reel in with the sass, but then I'm like pound with the science. It's kind of like my approach to social media.
Yeah, it makes sense. Cause if you don't have that personality, then it's just like a Wikipedia page. Mm-hmm. Like, calories are equivalent to 16 kilojoules per, it's like, what? So
yeah.
I just had an idea that I think might be fun, but feel free to just say no and continue talking about whatever you want to talk about.
Yeah.
That's also fine. But I was thinking it might be cool to choose like two or three common exercise, diet, health myths that are very yeah. widespread, and then we can just tear them apart. And so I'm thinking from the perspective of, or not we, but you.
Yeah.
So I'm thinking of a perspective of someone listening that is interested in health, is trying to do right. Maybe they go to the gym or do yoga and they eat some broccoli, or they're vegetarian or whatever, but they don't have multiple years of hardcore scientific background. Yeah. What would be like the common things that you are really passionate about that you hear all the time that drive you fucking cuckoo up a tree and you wish the whole world knew?
Okay, there's like a lot. There's a lot of things that get me riled up. I'm riled up very easily.
Do you want to just like ramble a bunch off and I can just choose one?
You can if you want. I'm like, oh man, I can't think of a couple. Like it's, but then I'm like, oh, but I can also think of 100. I mean, there's the stigma or misinformation around workouts that actually women should be doing for developing muscle and toning out and leaning out versus like what they're sold to be doing. There's the dichotomy around how like carbohydrates and misinformation on them being horrible for you and you're going to die in an instant versus like the reality of what that means to your diet. Fat blasting workouts really get me. The misuse of the term HIIT drives me crazy. Everything is just like these really crappy circuit workouts and there's no structure to anything and then no one gets results and then they're frustrated and they think they're broken, but it's just the industry telling them that they're broken. No one teaches anyone how to strength train or what that means and what it actually like looks like. And then because I run and I lift, everyone basically demonizes running in the fitness industry or tells you people they can't run and lift together or tells them how to do that. And that's not like to some extreme limits that is true, but also for most people that like is not an issue. That's a non-issue, but they're like told that like running will make you fat. You can't do it on top of lifting and like shames people from something that they enjoy. Man, there's just like so much crap out there that makes me so mad because it just ends up hurting people or making them feel like they're broken indirectly by the advice or telling them to do these things that are useless. And then they think that like something's wrong and it puts them on that hamster wheel like over and over again. So those are like the big things that I love to harp on. Mm-hmm. And then, yeah, I'll leave it at those.
Yeah. So on the other side of that, then what do people need to know about health and fitness? Or yeah. if you get a client that comes to you and says, hey, I'm looking to, I suppose that's the starting point is like, what are you trying to achieve in your life?
Yeah. I like to tell people that they have more of a say in their fitness than they think they do. So like the fitness industry, social media, whatever it is, the commercial gyms, they like to make it think that like they have the perfect solution or you have to fit their little checkbox of what being fit is. But you have a lot of say in what your fitness is and what that means to you. And so I think that's something that like people really got inspired by or excited by with me doing like my hybrid fitness where I showed myself lifting and running ultramarathons because no one shows you that you can do those things together. I'm like, but you can decide if you want to be a rock climbing yogi or a ultra running snowboarder or a weightlifting like Pilates lover. Like those, all these things can coexist. So you don't have to give up things that you love. You should always move in ways that you enjoy. You should figure out what your goals are. So I think there's a big difference where people, they like only want to do things they enjoy, but they end up doing nothing that gets them on the track to the goals that they have. And recognizing that sometimes you're going to have to do things that get you to like specific goals or that are good for your health, but that doesn't mean that you should abandon all the other things that you love on top of that. So a great example is like, again, I work with a lot of women specifically, but they want to just, they come from like, they do yoga and Pilates or like Orange Theory Fitness where the resistance training stimulus isn't as great, but they like that style as a training. And so when I tell them they need to add lifting, they're like, they feel really defeated because they're like, wait, what the heck? This isn't enough resistance training. Because they think anything that uses your muscles is a resistance training. And I'm like, you can still do yoga. You can still do Pilates. You can still go to Orange Theory Fitness. But if you have goals where you want to either improve your bone health or you want to gain muscle or you want to like tone or whatever it is, you should probably add in lifting a few days a week on top of the things that you love. So that way you can still get the results that you're looking for, but you don't need to abandon everything that you love at the same time. And I don't think there's enough of that message. There's people either just like completely shaming group fitness classes as being useless and you should only lift, or people who are like, oh, you should be doing this because it's long, lean, toned muscle and you have to do a bunch of reps and it's just doesn't actually end up, they're not bad. It's not like bad for you. It's like taking the wrong bus to the wrong location. But you know what I mean? Like you can take, there's a bunch of different buses that you can take. But if you want to go to San Francisco, you shouldn't take the bus to Chicago, right? It's kind of like they're giving them the tickets to the wrong bus that they want to do. And so they're giving them the wrong instruction guide or shaming them away from things without explaining to them why they need to be doing certain things to get to certain places and maybe why what they believe to be true isn't fully true. But instead of just saying that's wrong, trust me, not giving them the actual like tools to be successful to understand why that wasn't working. If that, does that make sense?
Mm. And so if somebody is at a gym or going to yoga, what kinds of questions that should they be asking the people that work there or trainers, right? So you're suggesting that individuals have more power in terms of defining their fitness.
Yeah. I think that there's a lot to being like an advocate for what you want. I mean, there's bad trainers, you know what I mean? They're on Instagram, yeah. They're in gyms, there's bad coaches. I usually encourage people if they can, like more of the classic functional fitness or like strength training facilities, you're going to get maybe more skilled, educated people that are going to be able to work with you and the goals that you have versus just telling you what you should be doing. But be an advocate for what you want. And if someone's not, like usually they give, I think in like many commercial gyms, you get like a free session and then they try to sign you on a package, but just don't sign that package blindly if the person's not willing to listen to you and what you want or reducing your goals. Because a lot of things people will do is they'll say like, I have this goal. So it might be like someone who loves to do yoga, but they recognize that they need more upper body strength to be able to do the things they want to do. Or maybe it's someone who's getting older and they recognize, okay, I care about my muscle mass and bone health a little bit more now. So I want to do these things. And you'll go into a lot of these gyms and people will be like, well, what's your body goal? What kind of, how much fat do you want to lose? What kind of weight do you want to lose? And I think that's a big issue for people where they get rerouted into the commercial fitness view of what goals are, but be like an advocate and have a say and challenge. Like, I think people think that because people are experts, you can't challenge them and you can, and you should. And if they're good at what they do, they should be able to like, give you explain like they it. Should they should be able to explain it to you. So don't be afraid to ask for a different trainer, go to a different gym, advocate for yourself, or ask the questions, like ask them why and make sure, and don't like just take, well, trust me for an answer, and tell them what you want to do, what your goal is, and asks like, say like, I'm looking for a strength training program to help me do X, Y, or Z, or whatever it is that your goal is trying to do. Cause usually a lot of people, strength is the least familiar. And that's the thing that I'm going to recommend to everyone, no matter what your goals are. But that doesn't mean everyone needs to strength train 5 days a week, right? That can mean just 2 days a week, full body versus a 5 day bodybuilding split. Like there's a much larger spectrum of what resistance training is than also maybe what the commercial bodybuilding industry and powerlifting industry makes it look like to people. It looks like this big, scary grunting lifting, but there's such a spectrum in between there. And if you get a good coach or a good trainer or a good gym, they're going to be able to help you think about your plan in a broader picture of where you want to be and where you're at and lay that out for you so that you can get to the goals you want. But you shouldn't have to abandon the things that you love in the meantime to get there. You might have to take seasons of where one thing's less and one thing's more, but that doesn't mean that you should have to like stop doing the things you love, because we know that enjoyment is one of the like biggest drivers of adherence and success when it comes to fitness. So there's no reason that we should stop people from moving in the ways that they enjoy. If you're a health professional, you should know better than to do that. But sometimes, you know, basic gym professionals tend to steer people away from that when the goal should be at the bottom level is getting people to move, right? And letting them find ways to do it and then helping them find ways that are more successful to get to where their goals want to be. But from the person's perspective, just like we say, be an advocate for your health when you go to the doctor, you know what I mean? Like be an advocate to your health when you go for coaches. And if you're trying to hire a coach or a trainer, you're also like, they're trying to win you over so they can get money from you, right? It's a trade-off, but you can be interviewing them back and making sure they're a good fit for you. Cause a good fit of a coach or a trainer or a class or an instructor or whatever it is going to just be, it's also going to be huge for your success, but also your support and whatever it is that you're trying to do.
So why is strength training so important? Like why do you recommend that? Why is that a big deal?
Yeah. So when people think of the exercise guidelines, like the general exercise guidelines, they think of like the 150 minutes of physical activity per week, at least 30 minutes a day, 3 times a week, or 75 minutes in like a vigorous, hard intensity activity, or 10,000 steps, or checking the box, or whatever it is. But we only think about, a lot of traditional exercise physiology coming from my field, but that has poured into the fitness industry, is only thinking of fitness and health as a means of aerobic fitness and cardiovascular fitness, which are very important. But muscular health, muscular fitness, and bone health and things like that are so, so, so important. And the exercise guidelines, the physical activity guidelines, also have 2 days of resistance training per week in there. But I feel like a lot of people, they miss that. So bottom line, like I said, move, be healthy, do things. Anything is better than absolutely nothing. But I'm a big shill for resistance training. But it allows you to not only, like, if people have body composition goals where they want to, like, quote unquote, tone, or they want to lose fat and gain muscle or things like that, you're going to have to resistance train. You have to give your body a stimulus, because that's how muscle grows. And the whole point of fitness, which is really cool, is you give your body something that's uncomfortable, and the next time it sees it, it wants to be better adapted to that. So it feels easier, kind of like the do hard things mentality. That's why I like fitness as a parallel for life all the time. But that's how muscle tissue grows, but it grows from tension and it grows from overload. So a lot of that's just like the tension of the way you're moving, but also doing more volume over time. So when we do things like running or Pilates, there's only so much volume you're giving your body, because it's only your body weight, but you need load to increase that number over time. So say you're doing like 10 pound bicep curls this week. Over the next few months, you want that to increase maybe from 10 to 12 to 15 to 20, whatever it is. It's not always that rapid, but you want to be increasing your weight. Or if you're doing like 3x10, you want to go like 4x10, like increasing the volume. So you want to be increasing the total amount of work that you're doing gradually over time, because it's giving that stimulus to your muscle. But the way you need to do that is to give a load or resistance or a weight to that muscle to adapt to, because if you give it the same stimulus all the time, it's not going to, it doesn't have any reason to grow, right? Like, we know that that makes sense in our life. It's just comfortable. Our bodies love homeostasis. So they're not going to change or grow or shift without that. But even beyond just like body composition goals, which I know a lot of people kind of have those, and we're coming up on the new year, and that's when everyone sets like their weight loss goals. When it comes to even like weight loss or fat loss, the best thing you can do during that is to lift, because it helps preserve the muscle tissue you have, while also allowing like driving more of that weight loss to be coming from fat tissue instead of muscle tissue, because you don't want to lose muscle. Like, really, we don't want to lose muscle. Muscle is one of the most metabolically active tissues on our bodies. It helps regulate our fat and carbohydrate metabolism. And does all these amazing things for us. Like, so we want that to be healthy, and we want to have that. And then when it comes to like our health and our longevity, you want strong muscles, but also resistance training puts load and stress on your bones, which makes your bones stronger, which is exceptionally more important for women than men because of the estrogen in our bodies. And so bone density will peak around your 20s, and then you can kind of maintain it. And a lot of stuff with aging, we can maintain or even grow throughout the rest of our life. There's not like an age limit on getting better. But doing that now, but if you're someone who just like stops doing any sort of load bearing activities, resistance training, whatever, and then you start to go older, you're losing muscle and bone density every year. And you don't want that to happen, because then as you get older, you're going to have more independence, less incidence of falling for bone fractures, like broken hips, broken bones, whatever that is, but you're going to be stronger as well. So it's like, it's something that has to do with also improving your quality of life as you age and you grow across your lifespan. But then just also having like, it plays a big factor into our health as well. So resistance training, I think for some reason, gets such a tied in wrap with just like bodybuilding and powerlifting and big bro lifters that we don't think of it as being like a health promoting activity. But I would say resistance training is one of the like the life hacks that we're all looking for. When everyone's looking for all these fitness secrets and hacks, if people just engaged in some form of resistance training 2 or 4 days a week, a lot of the things that they're seeking in their fitness or their life or whatever it is would actually end up occurring because of a result of engaging in that activity, instead of trying to find all these secret hacks or shakes or detoxes or teas or miracle pills or whatever it is. That like, just getting strong is just, it's like the most powerful thing in the world.
And so just so we're clear, can you give a couple of examples of resistance training, like what that means?
Yeah. So people get confused on this all the time, because it is confusing when we think about like how everything is displayed in the industry. That's a very valid question. So people think of resistance training. And so I want you to think of, there's a spectrum, right? So anything that's adding resistance can technically be resistance training. But when I talk about that specifically, I mean load bearing activities where you're lifting. When I say load, I just mean like you're moving weight. So think about like dumbbells, kettlebells, barbells, structured weightlifting, where the goal is to do a set amount of work rest and do a set amount of work. And over time, you're trying to increase how much weight you're moving. And so that gets confusing with a lot of stuff today. So like something like Orange Theory Fitness has weight training in it, but it's not progressive. It's more high intensity circuit based training. So you're more so using the weight for muscular endurance and high reps. And that doesn't mean it doesn't require strength. The same thing is I do CrossFit, but I don't rely on the WODs or the workouts of the day to gain my strength. I do specific strength training outside of it to get stronger so that when I do those WODs, I have more strength in them. That's more of a conditioning type thing. So people get really confused because they're like, wait, my this and that isn't weight training. And so those things are great. They're not bad for you. They are giving your body resistance and weight. And if that's where you're starting, that is phenomenal. I'm not deterring people from that at all. But if we have more specific goals, whether it's for muscle gain or body composition, or we don't feel like the weight that we're moving those classes is enough for ourselves, it's that specific, like you go to the gym and you're doing stuff with like a barbell or machines or dumbbells or kettlebells that are heavy. And so by the last rep, we actually feel like we could maybe get about 2 reps left. So really just below failure. I think a lot of people don't know what failure feels like. So I encourage people to just like take a set of whatever you're doing to like when you can't do more anymore, and then stop rest of the time right below that. And I think that's where people get confused. They don't use enough weight and they're just doing like X number of reps in a workout program and they're confused. Like the weight should be challenging your body and you should be adding a little bit more over time. Like the goal should be to be gradually and slowly add more weight or get better at a skill, like your form and your movement, if it's a more technical lift, or it's just adding a challenge to your body. Go ahead.
So resistance training, it sounds like, is pumping some iron. Is that fair?
Yes. I'm getting a little sciencey. I'm so sorry, but we're literally just pumping iron. Yeah.
Just like pumping iron and like lifting heavy stuff.
Yeah.
And the goal, and I'm just translating for myself. So
yes.
The goal should be that like you can't lift the thing anymore. Like you should try to work out until you're like, no, I can't do that anymore. I'm dead. I'm fucked. I can't feel my arms.
So not entirely that. There's actually a misconception that we should be like, I'm so sore, I can't move when I'm done. I can't function after this. We want to be right below that. You want to go below failure. Your workouts should be hard. They should be hard, but they're not going to be 100% failure. And you shouldn't be like crazy sore, I can't move for a week after. You want this is something I talk about a lot with my clients and on my page, is you want to take all that volume and spread it across your week so that you feel like you can actually recover between each workout. So if you're starting and you're a beginner, what you're going to be able to do as you're gaining form or skill or strength is your workouts probably actually won't have that many exercises in them, which seems crazy because a lot of what we're sold is like 1,000 exercise workouts, but it's going to be something really simple. And then you're going to go back and do it again, but you want to be able to be recovered for it the next day. And then over time, you'll be able to do more, but we don't need to go to the point that we're like, I can't move my arms. You don't want that to happen, but you want it to be like just below that. I only recommend that for people, like if they don't know what failure feels like, to take say you're doing shoulder presses, like go till you can't do any more reps, just so you know what that feels like psychologically in your head, so that when you're in the gym, you're like, okay, I need to go like a little bit below this. It's called RPE, rating of perceived exertion. So you can actually like use your intuition to help guide your strength and like what you're picking for your workouts.
And so that's so you kind of like will know when you're more advanced, like, okay, I'm good. I've hit that point. Like that's enough.
Yeah. And it is hard. It should still be hard. But it should be doable, I guess, is the best way to describe it. Hard, but doable. And you feel like in a couple minutes, you can go back and do more work. And then over the next few days, you're not like, I can't move my arms or legs kind of thing.
So you're like leaving a little bit of fuel in the tank. So to
speak. Yeah. Like you're keeping your workouts at 80%. That's a better way to describe it, at 80%. Mm-hmm. And a lot of people think if they're not going 100%, they're like not doing anything correctly, but there's a lot of good literature to show that keeping your workouts at that is actually just as efficient for progress without maybe digging too much into your recovery. So you kind of can get the best of both worlds and you can keep working out and feeling normal, like a human afterwards, and not hating working out because you feel like your body's just like super broken every day after you leave the gym.
So just to clarify that 80% thing. So an example, say I'm doing the bench press.
Yeah.
Right. I'm pumping some iron.
Yes.
And I'm doing my workout and it's really heavy, but I do 6 reps is my final thing. And I do 6 and I'm feeling exerted. But like you just suggested, I could probably do another round of 6. But you're suggesting like just leave it and like leave that 20% on the table and...
So a better way to describe it would maybe be if we looked at, like, if you did three sets of six, uh-huh. technically your strength would have been to be do eight, would have been able to do three sets of eight. So instead you took the reps back a little bit. Mm-hmm. So instead of going to failure each set,
right.
by the last set, you're like, okay, I could do two more here, but I don't need to do those last two kind gotcha. Of thing. So I think that's an easier way to explain it. So you can look at it set individual. But you can look at like sets as a whole where like over time, say like you got stronger, more fit, you could add a fourth set in there as you gained fitness as well. Mm. But when you first start out, that might be too much. That might leave you too sore. That might leave you not recovering. So like it kind of does go both ways. So sometimes less is more when it comes to that. And that way we can like still go in the gym and make progress, but you could do that 3x6 and know that you could do 8 reps at that weight if you had to, but you don't need to. Gotcha. And like, that's okay.
And so overall, it seems like building muscle requires lifting heavy stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And building muscle is good for us in the medium to long term because it will prevent us from falling down and breaking our hips and being starving to death alone in our apartment when we're older.
Yeah.
But it also has lots of health benefits.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And is that fair?
Yeah, no.
Okay.
Absolutely is fair.
And so that do you think that every human should be doing some kind of strength training and some kind of cardio training, such as running or swimming or?
My bias is that everyone should be doing both. And unless you're like an elite athlete where you need to be specialized in a certain thing. So like elite marathoners aren't going to be packing on a ton of muscle, but they're still lifting. So they're still benefiting from resistance training because it helps them be better runners. Mm. But then like elite Olympic weightlifters aren't going to be running ultra marathons. So there's a spectrum of where you're going to do these things. But for most general people in the middle, I think that they should be doing both because you want to build that muscle, but you also want that muscle to be metabolically active and healthy. This is kind of what my PhD research is on. So I'm always big on people because the point at which they interfere with each other occurs so much later in your training age or your progress or years and years into it that most people are going to be able to benefit from both. And then they're developing muscle tissue. They're getting stronger. They're getting that bone, muscle, tendon health, developing lean tissue, which is more metabolically active, more metabolically costly, like all these things that are good. But then when you do the conditioning, so whether it's your CrossFit classes or your HIIT or your swimming or your running, you're then developing like, I like to call it like the muscle machinery. So that's like your mitochondria. We always talk about those being like the powerhouse of your cell. And so in your energy systems that like burn our carbs and our fats in our bodies, that's when you're developing those. And that makes you more, helps make you more metabolically active and healthy, and you're able to like use your like the carbs and fats in your food better and more efficiently, and that leads to like better metabolic health long term. So I think everyone should be doing both, and I think that people should be doing some stuff that's higher and harder intensity, a little bit harder, a little uncomfortable, maybe like 1 or 2 days a week, but then the rest doesn't need to be that crazy high, hard, intense. It can actually be low intensity, easy, not doesn't feel super hard because it develops those systems, but one is a little bit harder. It pushes that upper threshold, but the rest should be recoverable. It should be easy. So a trend here as well with the cardiovascular stuff, just like lifting, is not everything needs to be so hard you want to vomit every time you do it. There's benefits to doing things easier and there's benefits to doing things harder.
That's good news.
Yes.
Do you feel comfortable or competent to speak about diet and nutrition as well? Is that your wheelhouse?
A little bit. I've taken a handful of nutrition classes and I did a diet intervention study and I study metabolism. So if there's anything that I don't feel like I'm qualified to speak on, I know the limits of my scope, but I would say that I kind of straddle that line between exercise physiology and diets and nutrition and all that stuff. So yeah.
Okay. Alyssa, what should I eat? What are the red flags? Because there's so much out there about fat is bad, carbs are bad, protein is bad, vegetables are bad, like everything is bad. And then the next week, it seems like everything is actually good.
Yes.
And it's potentially overwhelming for people who don't track this stuff day after day to know what's going on.
So without doubt, there's going to be someone who listens to this podcast that's going to disagree with me, and that's fine. That's okay. Yeah. We all have our opinions and dogmas because we all eat food, so we all think we have opinions.
And that's okay.
So,
we love you.
But maybe, and that's okay.
Maybe like as a sweeping generalization guidelines is like, Like, for example, vegetables, dark vegetables in particular, seem to be universally accepted as like a good thing to consume.
Yeah, there's some, I mean, there's some extremes now where people like eat only meat and they think vegetables and fiber are bad for you. That's a whole other thing. There's like a, it's like ping pong to those extremes. So assuming we're talking like in that middle ground where I'm very much so, if it works for you and you enjoy it, that's great. As long as you're not using misinformation to convince people that your style of eating is superior to other styles of eating. Generally, like if you, whatever you do, like people are vegan or vegetarian, I have no issue with that. It's either a moral choice or a personal choice, and that can absolutely be a healthy diet. You can eat meat and have a healthy diet. You can eat paleo and have a healthy diet. You can eat low carb and have a healthy diet. It just depends on probably the stuff that you're including in it. But the general consensus, I would say most of us can agree on with some degrees of freedom, is plants are good for you. I always say eat a damn vegetable. That's my hashtag. I love simplified nutrition. I love not overcomplicating it. I'm busy. I don't have the time to make these crazy fancy, like super cliche wellness meals. You know what I mean? Where people think their food has to be like crazy Instagram worthy. I'm like, keep it simple. So I always say eat a damn vegetable because vegetables are good for you. We should be eating fruit. We should be eating vegetables. Like, we're adults. Put those in your body. Accept that that's our fate. Like, find the ones that you like. Don't eat the ones that you hate. Like, figure it out. There's tons of them, right? So I think we can agree, like, vegetables are good for you. Try and include a vegetable on most meals. If you miss a meal without a, I just ate a meal right before this without a vegetable in it. Like, I didn't die. It's okay. I'll eat extra vegetables at dinner. Like, it's not that serious. Like, for most of this stuff, like, most of the time, eat a vegetable or fruit or colorful or fibrous something in your meals, whether that's adding a side of fruit to your breakfast or like vegetables in your thing. Eat a vegetable. Frozen vegetables, fine. Whatever you need to do. I live off like frozen vegetables entirely because you can throw them on a pan and put them in the oven. I call the way I eat and cook lazy list nutrition. I have a free guide I give my people that follow me on Instagram. It's like my lazy meals that I make where it's like I throw this crap on a pan and then I go take a shower and I come out and I have salmon, veggies, and potatoes, and you could think it was a gourmet meal, but it's not. But it's healthy and it's easy and it's simple. So vegetables good. Unless you're like carnivore, then you hate vegetables, but for most part vegetables good. Thumbs up, we can agree on that.
All right.
I'm a big proponent of moderate to high protein diets. The literature of protein hurting our kidneys, unless you have some unique medical conditions, you're probably fine. There's a lot of good science to show that higher protein diets are great for maintaining muscle mass, like we talked about. If you're trying to develop muscle mass, you also need adequate protein to do that. If you're not trying to just like survive day to day, I mean, you can get like the RDA, the recommended dietary
allowance.
I haven't had a class in like 2 years. I'm losing my brain. It's super low. And so people refer to that a lot. And so when I tell them the ranges of protein that I recommend, I'm like, that's great to stay alive as a human. That should be your bottom line goal, to stay alive. Right. So but if we have,
for example, I've heard like a gram per pound of body weight.
Yes. So that's probably the upper end of the spectrum. I was going to say my spectrum of what it is. So the RDA ends up being like 30 to 60 grams of protein a day for like the average person, which is fine for keeping you functional. And you'll get that if you're not even really trying for the most part, but we probably want more than that. So a gram per pound of body weight is probably the upper end of that spectrum where I'm going to recommend most people. That's about what I eat, give or take.
But I probably care.
Yeah. And I care way more about my muscle than most people, but I'm also have a leaner body composition. So I know most of my body mass is muscle. So I'm trying to like go for that. And I strength train like 10 hours a week. So like, I know that I need more protein probably than the average person. That is great. And you can eat 1 gram per pound of body weight per day. There's a lot of stuff that shows that higher in the protein spectrums helps with satiety. So a lot of people tend to have trouble being hungry between their meals, or their meals not filling them up. Protein keeps you fuller. It's slower digesting. It also has a higher thermogenic effect of food, which means if you burn more calories digesting protein than you do anything else. There's even some literature that shows that you can overeat calories coming from protein and you actually won't gain as much body fat as you would from overeating carbs or fat. It's very interesting. Protein's an interesting macronutrient. It doesn't follow all the rules exactly. I mean, you can't overeat protein, but it's kind of our friend, and we tend to not eat enough protein. That's something I would say most people struggle with. So if there's like one thing that I would encourage people is like, even if you don't track your food, because say 1 gram per pound of body weight per day for people is like useless to them because they're not going to track their food unless like I don't even track all the time. I only track like selectively. But it is helpful if you do it just to see what it looks like. But just whenever you're making a meal, if you're making protein, like a chicken with it, add a little bit more kind of thing. Like that's just an easy way to think of that. But the range I would say is like 0.6 to 1 gram pound of body weight per day. I would probably not recommend going below that. I usually say 0.7 or 0.8 mm-hmm. to that one. But if you have more like adipose tissue or fat mass and less muscle mass, you can probably eat a little less because your total body weight, again, is not as much lean tissue. So like people who are maybe have a little bit more fat mass or whatever, you don't need to eat a pound per body weight per day because you don't, it's just not necessary for you to do that. Like you can eat carbs and fats from that as well. Mm-hmm. Or if you're not as active or you're just like not that serious or it's hard for you, like it's okay for you to eat like 0.7, 0.8 grams per pound of body weight per day. You don't need to go to that extreme, which I think is a little bit more realistic for people. Cause like for me, that's the difference of like 30 or 40 grams of protein a day for me if I adjust that scale downwards, which is actually a lot easier to get in. That's like getting in that extra protein is very hard. And I think for a lot of people that requires more cooking or more thought or more effort. So you don't need to be that extreme, but adding in more protein, turning up the dial on the protein that you're eating, or just being more mindful about like your meals. Cause I think a lot of people like breakfast is a meal where people will eat things that they'll have no protein in it at all. They're just going to eat like a muffin or a bagel. So just think about if you can add like eggs or a protein shake or a yogurt or something else that has a little bit more protein to it. Cause not only will it help you stay fuller for longer, it will help you be less hangry later on, but it will just help you get that in across the day a little bit more. So you don't have to track your food, but if you're like making sure that you're getting about, I would say like 20 to 30 grams of protein in each meal throughout the day, you're going to hit like that 90 gram target. And then maybe like keeping your snacks focused or encouraged on having like protein-based snacks or protein with your snacks more or less. And that's an easy way to get it in, but vegetables good. Protein, probably eat a little more. You don't need to be a bodybuilder and eat like every single meal and 1,000 grams of chicken every single day. Carbs are not bad. Carbs are dependent on your activity level. I think that's the best way to put it. So people demonize carbs, but if you're more active, you're just going to need more carbs, which the opposite of that is if you're less active, you're just going to need less carbs. And I think that's where a lot of those arguments get missed. But I truly believe that people aren't overeating carbs as much as they think they are, but a lot of foods that we associate as being carbohydrates are carbs and fats together. And that's an easy way to overeat fats and carbs and food. And they're usually low in protein. So we think of like donuts and pizza and just our typical comfort American foods, mac and cheese, that those things are totally fine. You can eat those. They're not bad for you. But they're not like just carbs on their own. They're usually carbs and fats combined together with some protein. We eat mixed macro meals. But when I think about like carbs, I'm talking about just like general carbohydrates. Like most of us aren't eating just like plain carbs. And so because I care more about fitness, I'm very cognizant of the fact that I try to eat just like strict carb sources. So just like fruit, rice, potatoes, cereal, applesauce packets, like just those things that are like pretty much just like carbohydrate so I can get more carbs in. But when I'm more active, you just need more carbs because that drives a lot of the energy systems that our bodies use for activity and fitness. So like if you're working out more, you're going to need more carbs, and that's normal, where people maybe who work out less need less carbs. And that's where I think a lot of the arguments around carbs being good or bad gets in trouble, because a lot of people aren't really crazy active, but if you're lifting and you're trying to gain muscle, you want the carbs to help energize your workouts, but you want the protein to recover. So like it all comes full circle in these things. So carbs aren't good or bad. They're energy source dependent, but if we are going to eat carbs, we do want them to come from more like whole sources. So like the rice, potatoes, whole grains, vegetables, fruits. Like I'm very, like, real, I'm not saying
you're talking about food.
Yeah, like eat food. Like so
like eat real food as opposed to like drinking a monster canned beverage that's full of crap, but it's also carbs. It's,
because that's not going to fill you either, but you can eat carbs. I think people just kind of think of carbs all the wrong way, where carbs aren't bad for you. They fuel a lot of your stuff. But yeah, if you drink a 300 calorie monster versus eating 300 calories of rice or a bagel or potatoes, like that's going to be very different in your body, but it's also going to be spike your blood sugar a lot quicker. You're going to feel crappier after eating it versus like if you eat it within your meals. But carbs help. They help fuel your brain. They help keep your cognitive function going. They also support hormones and like your thyroid. So I think a lot, especially like the women that I work with, they restrict carbs, but they don't go all the way to the point of being like in ketosis, like doing the keto diet, but they don't eat enough carbs. So they just feel miserable all the time. And then they're all worried about their hormones being balanced because an Instagram guru said that, but they're not even eating enough carbohydrate to support their physiological functions, because they're like what I call like the zone of just like suffrage, where you're like not in ketosis, but you're not eating even enough. I think it's like your brain needs 130 grams of carbs a day just to function, like just your brain on its own. And so below that, you're going to be like, you're going to have that, you're just going to feel crappy all the time. So I think of thinking of carbohydrates as like supporting your brain and then supporting your activity. But when you're more active, you just need more carbs. And when you're less active, you need less. It doesn't make them good or bad. You just need to fuel for whatever it is that you're doing.
Yeah.
And then fats kind of just fill in the rest of it. Yeah.
Yeah. So I would love to hear about fats, but how much of your own diet or your recommendations relate to the idea of like, quote unquote, listening to your body versus trying to create a spreadsheet and ensure you're getting 0.8 grams of protein per pound? Or, I mean, do you use that? Do you recommend that?
There's a big argument right now in the space between intuitive eating and tracking. And I think that everyone's yelling the same thing and not listening to each other and making it more confusing for other people. My podcast is called The Messy Middle, because I like to think that I live in the messy middle, where I like to like look at all things. So I think intuitive great eating is fantastic. I think a ton of people have high rates of disordered eating because of the messages that we're given our entire lives. Or like I was saying, a lot of like when we talk even about carbs, people fear them because they're just told things about them that are just makes them scarier than they are, or they're informed incorrectly. So I think people think that I'm intuitive eating pro, but anti-macros, but I'm actually like pro both, if that makes sense. So right now I'm currently tracking my macronutrients and food intake because my training volume is so high that I know that I need to hit certain carbs and protein goals for me to like perform. And so I'm not even trying to hit like a macronutrient target. I'm literally just like, this is not an accepted thing in the world. It's like, I wouldn't say I'm intuitively tracking, but I'm eating what I want. I'm just monitoring it, if that makes sense right now.
Yeah.
I'm not really hitting a macro target. I'm just making sure that I'm eating enough to support myself. Now, I don't track all the time. I'm not like super hardcore about it. I take months off. I've taken years off. I think it's a useful tool. And I think for some people, it's really helpful for them to conceptualize what things look like, or just to take that audit of like what they're actually eating and when they're eating things. Cause I think a lot of people find out that they're under eating, or like, they're like, oh my gosh, this is why I feel so crappy. Cause my lunch was literally just like lettuce and that was it kind of thing. Like my salad was just sad. So I think like it can be a useful tool for some people to use for learning. But then I think for some people it's super disordered and they get obsessed with it and they get hooked and obsessed with numbers. And then things like intuitive eating or just being more mindful or just having nutrition education go a long way. Cause it'd be great if we could all train everyone to be food robots, food and exercise robots. I tell my clients all the time, I'm like, you're not nutrition, you're not food and exercise robots. And so my goals are more serious. So I have to like find that fine line of like, I tend to favor fats, but if I don't eat enough carbs, I'm going to feel like crap. So I have to like make that choice for myself. But for the most people, you can trade off a lot of those things in your diet and be fine. But I think it's a useful tool. I think it can be harmful for some people. But I do think the goal should be to not be relying on tracking unless you like super diehard love it. And you should be able to like have mindfulness. And I think this is even one of the pillars of intuitive eating, is being mindful about the choices you're making and knowing that like living off of Oreos is not a good choice. Like, I think we can all agree on that. I think a lot of people think of when you're intuitive eating, you're like just going to eat whatever you want. But I think there is something to be said about understanding nutrition and understanding macronutrients and the roles that they do for yourself and your body, but also knowing that like foods aren't bad. Like, there's no good or bad foods. It's context dependent. Too much of anything is probably not great. Able to like make a meal with being just aware of what you're eating and putting in your body, but also like honoring what you kind of want at the same time. I think it just takes a lot of years to get to that point because of all the messages we've been inundated with for like our whole lives.
Yeah. So what I'm hearing, I think, is like the idea of listening to your body, but also making better choices. So if you're craving Oreos and you just want to eat a ton of Oreos, it might actually be that you're feeling emotional, or that, you know, there's the whole psychological, emotional stuff that we're not touching on today. That might be a thing. Or it might be like that you actually need protein, but you're looking for it in Oreos. Or like if you want some kind of a sweet treat, you could have like an apple or an orange or some dark chocolate instead of processed Oreos. Is that
fair? So I think it's more so like if you want something, eat it. But the goal shouldn't be that you restrict so much that then you're like gorging on something, right? So like if you want an Oreo, and like the more you're around stuff, the less you're probably going to be likely to like be as enticed by it because they won't feel like you're restricted by it. So like you want an Oreo, have an Oreo or a couple Oreos, but the goal shouldn't be to go eat like 6 sleeves of Oreos because you're so hungry that you eat all day that now you're craving sugar because your brain wants carbohydrates and you're like, crap. Or, you know, you're super emotional and not recognizing or sitting with whatever you're doing. And then you end up inadvertently eating things that make you feel like crap and you're not being aware of it. So I think that's where like being mindful, but also kind of tying back into my eat a damn vegetable thing, like being an adult and knowing where your body needs certain things to feel a certain way. And like, it's a very messy topic, right? Cause it's so person dependent and everyone has such strong opinions on it. And I think it's the same thing with people having like a say in their fitness. Like, I think that's where people have a say. I tell people too, I'm like, you have a say in how you feed yourself, but there's going to be certain things about nutritional science that we know for the most part to be pretty concrete. You deserve to understand and be educated on those, but what you use with that information is really going to depend on what your goals are and what your relationship with food is, where some people might need more like help on that more psychological end of the spectrum where they've had disordered eating, where some people are like, literally just give me the numbers. I'm a human calculator. I don't care. Like, I'll just eat whatever's put in front of me. So I think that people are complex, right? And we vary so much and our relationships and histories with food vary, which I think makes eating so much more of a triggering topic. Because if I tell you muscle physiology, you're not going to like sit there and be like, that's not how my muscles work, because it is how your muscles work. But this, it overlaps with a lot of different external factors.
Yeah. One thing that I found useful, so I like downloaded some free app. I think it was like the Lance Armstrong app or something. A while ago, and I just tracked everything that I put in my body for like a week, or like a week or 10 days as just an exercise. And then at the end of that time, I kind of looked at it of like, oh, I ate that and I ate that and I ate that. And it's like a menu of everything that you've eaten for the week. And it was kind of revealing in that way because it's data, right? It's facts.
Yeah.
Of like, oh shit. Yeah. I ate it. I did good about my vegetables this week. And then it adds all the macronutrients. And one thing that surprised me was that it said that I ate a lot of fat, like that the fat in my diet was really high.
That's a common thing.
Yeah. So maybe do you want to speak to that?
Yeah.
Brief. I'm conscious of your time too.
No, you're fine. Okay. I don't have anything the rest of the day. I'm working for myself the rest of the day. So you're totally okay. I think what that is, that's like where people worry and panic and they think carbs are bad, but they're probably not overeating carbs as much as they think they do. And I was saying how a lot of sources we associated being carbs have fat in them, but fat's kind of in everything. You don't really have to try to eat fat. Now, fats are good for you. They're not bad, especially if they're coming from like nuts and seeds and like seafood or all like avocados, those things. Like there's no, I'm not saying fats are bad for you. They're an important part of our diet. They're important for a lot of things in our body and functions. But they're in everything. So I, like I was saying right now, like I'm tracking again because I'm increasing my training volume. I want to make sure that I'm recovering appropriately and just kind of keeping an eye, just what you were doing there. I'm just monitoring what I'm eating, just taking an audit of it. But I have to really make an effort to not eat like a crap ton of fat, because then like, cause when you think about caloric balance, I usually tell people keep your protein controlled and then the rest of your calories can kind of come from carbs and fats and whatever ratio you want. But if you have more performance goals, you're going to be better off increasing that carb percent just because it will sustain that. But I'm always shocked. I've tracked on and off for years. I go on and off and I know that I tend to favor fats, but also I think we don't realize that fats are like sneaky and they're in everything and they're so easy to get in and they're so calorie dense, and that doesn't make them bad. That's great, especially if people have a hard time eating enough. But I think that's a really big eye-opening thing for people is how much fat's in literally everything you eat. And that's not an uncommon thing that people realize when they're tracking. They're like, crap, like I'm halfway through the day and I've already had like X grams of fat, which shouldn't be a bad thing. But for some people, obviously that can be like triggering and scary, because people get, you know, once people discover how many calories are in peanut butter, they freak out for the rest of their life kind of thing. But that's not uncommon. And I think that's just because every food we eat, especially if you're eating like animal products, you know what I mean?
For me, it was coconut oil.
Yeah.
I put coconut oil in like oatmeal and then I cook with it and it's just delicious.
Yeah.
That was a big one.
Yeah. So I have
to, it's just fat.
I think people get it with like nut butters or olive oil or coconut oils or I'll do like the Kerrygold Irish butter with some stuff. That's probably the only really big fat source that I kind of use. And like, I'm like, oh, I have to ration my Kerrygold on my bagel this morning so then I can put it on my dinner later, which isn't a big deal. I don't mind doing it. It doesn't trigger me to do that. But I'm always just so flabbergasted because we just, you know, you cook with it, you add a little bit of dressing, you add a little bit of sauce, you add a little bit of whatever it is, and it just sneaks its way into your whole diet. So I think, I'm not telling people they should go fear fats or anything, but I think that we're, carbs get all the bad rap. You know what I mean? Where fats are just sneaking their way into our lives from every which way.
Right. So overall, it sounds like just eat real food, eat more damn vegetables, try to get some healthy protein with every meal. Lift weights, pump some iron.
Yeah.
Do some cardio that makes you feel good, that you love doing, such as dancing or yoga or Pilates or swimming or whatever.
Yeah.
And live your best life. Is that fair?
I know. It sounds so unsexy and like everyone wants some secret hack. And I'm like, there's like little intricacies in your nutrition that you can be unique to you, but for the most part, eat a little more protein, eat a vegetable, like
what's your thoughts on supplements?
I am in the camp of creatine, caffeine, and protein are like my ones that I'm go-to for. So I think protein supplementation, I use Legion supplements. There's a few brands out there that are like more evidence science-based. They're like, they dose based off what the literature says, but they're actually like tested, third-party tested, where a lot of supplement lines aren't. So like, I'm very iffy with supplements because a lot of them are just like random brands that you don't really know what you're getting. But if they're like good quality, I'm pro protein, whether it's plant-based or whey or whatever it is. If you're having a hard time getting protein in, or you just supplement once a day because you know that you're not eating enough in your meals, like that can be beneficial. So protein supplements are good. I wouldn't say go supplement like four times a day, but throw in a shake after your workouts or for extra protein. Totally like thumbs up.
I'm a vegetarian. I use rice protein.
Yeah.
And I add it to my oatmeal in the morning with a bunch of random shit like greens powder and all that crap.
Yeah. So people put oatmeal in protein powder. They put it with their coffee. The only thing with plant-based proteins is like, some labels will have this. You just want to look at like the amount of leucine, which is a specific amino acid you're getting in it. And because plant proteins are metabolized a little bit differently than like your whey proteins, because you just want to, you maybe sometimes want to take a little more of a serving at a time just to get to that point where it's like stimulating your muscle protein synthesis. But if you're putting it with another meal where there's other proteins in it, you're probably fine. And if you're a vegan or vegetarian, you know that like you pair your proteins together. So you're getting complete ones in your meals and you're getting enough throughout your day. So I think protein's great supplement. It's not necessary though. Some people hate protein powder. Like you never have to consume protein powder in your life, but it can be very helpful.
What about like vitamins?
Yeah. I take fish oil. That's one that's actually pretty supported. I have a multivitamin. Sometimes I take it. I think it can kind of be your insurance policy on your diet. Some people are like, oh, you don't need vitamins at all. Don't worry about it. Eat a whole healthy diet. Where like some people are like, it's insurance policy. You'll probably pee out anything that you don't need. Cause generally our bodies, if we have more than enough, you're just going to pee it out. I'll do like sometimes I'll supplement like zinc, especially if I'm getting like a cold, you know what I mean? Like things like that. I might take that in. There's some little things like that. But
eating every damn vegetable when you eat a healthy not plant-based, but whole food, real food-based diet, you're probably okay.
Yeah. Yeah. And our bodies are pretty smart. You know what I mean? Like, you know, I think I'm more worried about the people that are living off like Cheetos, a whiff of air and a Monster. Like you'd be surprised. Like, I think we all tend to overthink our diets, but there's people out there who are like, are not consuming a single nutrient, like even like just like no nutrients at all. But, our bodies are pretty smart. Like that's why I'm like, eat a vegetable, eat fruits. Eat varieties of foods, getting those in. You want to take a multivitamin as like your insurance policy for some extra things. That's great. I think people sometimes tend to abuse antioxidants. They'll like take a ton of like vitamin C and stuff like that. They'll just like take a crap ton of it and you're just going to pee a bunch of that out. Like people will take a lot of stuff like B vitamins because they think it gives you energy, but it just is actually a coenzyme in our energy pathways. And if you have enough from your diet, you're just going to pee it out. Like it doesn't actually give you energy. So a lot of these things depend, but you can always get like blood panels if you're worried that you're low on anything. And then you can actually see. So like I was low on vitamin D the last time I got a blood panel. So now I'm like supplementing with that because I know that like that's something that my body doesn't have enough of. So like I was able to like make that decision based off my own needs. Vitamin D is one where like, especially in the winter months now, like that's one they usually recommend for people who live in the north or in the winter, stuff like that. Dosing that usually like don't blindly dose, but that's one that's usually pretty well supported and tolerated, or there's some good evidence for it for athletic performance. So like these individual vitamins can be beneficial. But then beyond that, I think circling back to the other ones, like the only other really sports nutrition supplement that I like encourage people to take is creatine, especially if you are weight training. Creatine is great. It's like one of the most evidence-based sports supplements you can take, and there's a ton of health benefits for that as well that are starting to come out. So we think of creatine as being a bro supplement, but that's like kind of falls in now into like the vitamins, but also sports supplements thing because it's being used as like a health supplement now too, which is pretty cool. So those are probably the few that like, I might be missing a few, but generally those are the ones that are like well supported and, you know, you can take, and, there might be little things here and there, like some nuance or early data, but a lot of the supplements out there are just crap or they're a scam or you don't really need them, or the data is so novel that the claims that people are making versus what it does don't line up yet. That's what's something we see a lot in our field. So usually I tell people like, creatine, caffeine, protein, and then maybe like those handfuls of vitamins and minerals that are like good and can support things that we need or if we're deficient.
Yeah. Thank you so much for all of your wisdom and knowledge and sass. I appreciate you coming on the podcast. I just learned a lot.
Hopefully that wasn't too sciencey. I try to keep it very like,
it's just good, like
swallowable.
Yeah, digestible. Like it's good to
digestible. That's the word.
It's good that because you have so much knowledge from a scientific and a research based approach, which I really respect, obviously, because I'm a science dork too. And it's nice to talk to somebody that knows all of that and has read countless papers and is literally doing research about exercise physiology, and then also says things like just eat vegetables. Lift some weights a couple times a week, move your body. Like it's not actually rocket science. And that's refreshing for me at least.
No, I think so many people, and that's something that's why I get so sassy on the internet. Cause I'm like, you're just overcomplicating health, or it's raising that barrier of health for people. And like, that's not what we need in our country right now. We need to make it more accessible for all people. And like the only other thing I would add to all of that, which I'm like a chill for, is sleep. If you can, I know like some people, they don't have that or they have kids or babies, but like of all of those things, the best thing for sleep. Your metabolism and your muscle recovery and your health and like all of this stuff is sleeping enough, Yeah. Sleep is the number one biohack.
100%. I 100% agree with you. And I think his name is Matthew Walker. You heard of this person? He wrote a book, I might have his name wrong, but he was on Joe Rogan's podcast a couple years back.
I think I know who you're talking about. My best friend I run podcast with, she like is a sleep researcher. So I hear a lot from her.
Oh, okay. Maybe I think that's his name, Matthew Walker. Let me try and Google it real quick. But anyway, he was on Joe Rogan talking about the science behind sleep and the countless studies that they've now done. And it is like mind blowing how significant sleep is for you. It's like the best thing you can do.
Yeah, basically no, what I was saying I is agree. Like, even though I don't research sleep, that's like,
get some sleep is the point. And listen to that.
We just totally talked over each other, but yeah.
Yeah, I apologize. The internet's cutting out.
No, I think that like, no, you're okay. But no, I completely agree. I think that's one thing that people look over for a productivity hack or a health hack is just how much sleep. And then sleep gives you, that's my secret. When people say, we'll circle back to your first statement before we wrap this up. That's how I have so much energy is I sleep enough. That's how I do all the things that I do. That's how I run ultra marathons and run a business and get a PhD is I sleep 7 to 9 hours a night. And that is my secret.
Yeah. Agreed. I'm the same. I have this little app called, I think it's Sleep Timer, where it listens mm-hmm. to, have you used this before? It like,
you no, put, but I think I've used some of them.
Yeah. You like put it next to your bed at night and it tracks your breathing and it tells you like how deeply you slept and it gives you like a score each night. And that's another way to just have some data of like, oh, I was in bed for 6 hours or I was in bed for 9 hours. Anyway, it's all good. You're fantastic, yeah. Alyssa. Thank you so much. I know you've got an Instagram account, but is that the best way for people to find you?
Yeah, I think Instagram's probably where I hang out the most, and you can get my links to everything there. It's just at Little List Fitness, and there you can find my website, my training plans, my podcast, my everything. It's all there. So that's like the best place to go to find all things Little List Fitness, or just littlelistfitness.com. You'll find everything else there.
And what is the name of your website if people are interested? Or sorry, your podcast?
The Messy Middle.
Messy Middle Podcast. That's right. All right, friend. You're a gem. I appreciate you. And I will talk to you soon.
Yeah.
Woo! So much information. Diet, exercise, nutrition, health, wellness, weightlifting, ultramarathon running, the Grand Canyon. She's full of it, right? You can find her on Instagram. I've included links to that in the show notes, including her website. She's got some free goodies that you can check out. Thank you for being here. Thank you for the 5-star reviews. Hint, hint, wink, wink. It really does make a difference. It helps justify me to legitimize my professionalism when I approach podcast guests. And I can say, look, I'm good. People like me. So I appreciate that. Thank you for your support. Do pass this along to anybody you think might benefit. And check Alyssa out. Get involved. And you can also find me on Instagram at longdistancelovebombs. I also have a website, longdistancelovebombs.com. I send a weekly newsletter every Wednesday, Wednesday Winspiration. I have a monthly membership group called Team Never Giver Upper, where I host live podcasts, I teach workshops. Anyway, keep doing what you're doing. Keep enjoying your life. Do some somersaults and cartwheels. Don't forget that the sun is always out somewhere and that all these storm clouds are eventually going to pass. Keep kicking ass.